Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Tech Loft podcast. We skipped last week's episode. I just didn't have time to put out an episode, but we're back again this week. And in this episode, we got a lot of things to cover. We got a little bit of gaming, some Sony, some Microsoft articles that I found. As well as a few privacy ones, one Signal, facial recognition, Huawei hardware on the mobile networks in the Netherlands, you know, concerns about that. So that's coming up. So we got a lot articles to share with everyone. And before I begin, I just want to remind everyone to please, wherever you are listening to this podcast, please feel free to subscribe. If you can, depending on what platform you're listening to, because I think this podcast can be found on like 10 platforms. The episode if you liked it. If you like the podcast in general, please think about subscribing on one of the platforms that you are listening to this show on. And I guess with that out of the way, let's begin. All right, everybody, and welcome to our first article that I found here. So this one here is going back to an episode I did when I shared information about Sony closing the PS3 and PS Vita stores. So apparently, as of April 19th, Sony backtracks on the PS3 and PS Vita store shutdowns. So back in March, Sony revealed its plans to shut down the digital PlayStation 3 and PlayStation Vita storefronts this summer. The announcement received a lot of pushback from gamers, and today Sony announced that it's making an about-face. The PS3, PS Vita stores won't be shutting down this summer as originally announced, and will instead stay online so users can continue to purchase games and other media from those platforms. In a PlayStation blog post published around the 19th, Sony Interactive Entertainment president and CEO Jim Ryan indicated that the decision to close these stores was the wrong call. Recently, we notified players that PlayStation Store for PS3 and PS Vita devices was planned to end this summer, Ryan wrote. Upon further reflection, however, it's clear that we made the wrong decision here. So today, I'm happy to say that we will be keeping the PlayStation Store operational, and PS3 and PS4 PS3 and PS Vita devices. PSP commerce functionality will retire July 2nd, 2021 as planned. Originally, Sony planned to end support for digital purchases on PlayStation 3 on July 2nd and for PS Vita on August 27th. On those dates, digital sales of all content would cease, though Sony assured that previously purchased games and media would still be accessible and downloadable even after the PS3's and PS Vita's stores shut down. I'm going to take a pause here and say, this is the most important thing, is that your game purchases are in fact safe even though the stores closed. So you may not have the game saved on your installed or saved on your little console or PS3, but at least you have access to them. And that's what's important here. Access to your digital games. Continuing on with this article. When we initially came to the decision to end purchasing support for PS3 and PS Vita, it was born out of a number of factors, including commerce support challenges for older devices and the ability for us to focus more on our resources on newer devices where the majority of our gamers are playing on, Ryan continued. We see now that many, many of you are incredibly passionate about being able to continue purchasing classic games on PS3 and PS Vita for the unforeseeable future. So I'm glad we are able to find a solution and continue operations. Ryan doesn't give a new date for when the stores might shut down, suggesting that the PS3 and PS Vita stores will be accessible for some time to come. We'll let you know if Sony shares more specifics in the future, but for now, it looks like PS3 and PS Vita users don't have to worry about their stores vanishing anytime soon. So, you know, that's pretty good. But the thing to remember here is, I don't think you've got new games coming out on these platforms anymore. I don't think so. I'm going to assume you're not. So, I mean, all I can say is, you know, you should get on those, you should get on those stores, purchase what you think is a good game or what you've been told to try out. And then that's it. You've got those games. They're part of your library. But I mean, how much longer are purchases going to go through? Because now it comes to the point is, are we making money on having these stores open, or there's no one buying games? I mean, I'm pretty sure that was one of the factors, whether people were continuing to purchase games for their PS3 and Vita. I mean, there may be some. I'm not saying there aren't any. But again, the cost to maintain the infrastructure, the point of sale system for that, does it outweigh shutting it down? Anyways, so that's that article. Good news. The stores are open for your PS3, PSV, Vita games. Okay, so moving on to our next article. It's another Sony article. So Sony reports PlayStation's best year ever as PS5 shipments surpass 7.8 million. Next-gen console beats out PS4 launch. Sony has released its latest financial earnings report for the latest fiscal year, and it's a real doozy. The industry giant's latest hardware, PlayStation 5, has shipped a staggering 7.8 million units since its launch back in November 2020, exceeding its sales forecast and leading to record profits for Sony's game and network division. Despite distribution issues and ongoing component shortages, PlayStation 5's launch was an incredible success for Sony, shifting more consoles in its release period than last generation's PlayStation 4. Though it should be noted that PlayStation 4, PS4 was made available in fewer territories at launch than PS5, which enjoyed a relatively global release. Combined sales of hardware, software, downloadable content, and PlayStation Plus subscribers led to the overall record-breaking revenue of $24.4 billion for the fiscal year. Speaking of PS4, sales and shipments continued to slow on Sony's trusty black box, now stands at a very impressive 115.9 lifetime shipments. 1 million PS4 consoles have still moved from store shelves since the start of 2021, showing that there is life in the old dog yet. In regards to software, PS4 and PS5 sold a combined 61.4 million units in the fourth quarter of 2020, down a hefty 3.9 million units on the previous year, but still driving some $6.22 billion in revenue. Digital sales continue to dominate, with 79% of all software sales purchased as downloadable titles. Oh, I'm not for that. Hopefully you guys know that. I am not all for downloadable titles. Must own the disc. It's old-fashioned, I know, but you need the hard copy. Moving on, paid subscription service PlayStation Plus continues to grow each year, currently standing at 47.6 million users, an increase of over 6 million users from the previous fiscal year. While the ninth generation of gaming has gotten off to a slow and troubled start, with issues concerning manufacturing, global distribution, scalpers, and a lack of first-party software, it seems that PlayStation remains firmly in the black heading into gaming's new dawn in as strong a position as it has ever been. So there you go. A little bit of stroking the ego for PlayStation users. Sony is looking good. Now, just to make it easier, I also got an article for Xbox. And it's nothing short, but Xbox is absolutely killing it for Microsoft. So stop me if you've heard this one before. A massive conglomerate just announced their third quarterly results, and their headline game platform, in this case Xbox, is making an absolute killing. There's no part of Microsoft that isn't enjoying a bit of a purple patch right now. The company's revenue for the third quarter of 2021 jumped by 19% to $53.6 billion. That's 41.7 billion US. While the company made a healthy 15.5 billion net income. But some of the juiciest numbers came from Microsoft's gaming division, which enjoyed a 50% jump in revenue thanks to greater demand for Xbox hardware and services. The ongoing demand for the Xbox X and S, Microsoft didn't break out the numbers per console, saw hardware revenue soar by a staggering 232%, a figure that would probably be higher if the world's supply of silicon wasn't completely buggered right now. Engagement on Xbox platforms hit an all-time high, and Microsoft's lead of communications also noted how games are evolving into metaverse economies, something that seems particularly apt with the growth of Fortnite, Minecraft, and Roblox in the recent years. Minecraft is especially popular. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella revealed during the earnings call that Microsoft has over 140 million active users and 30% increase year on year. Now, I'm guilty. I've recently, in the past couple of weeks, come back to Minecraft and just, you know, you just get in the world, drop into the world and just start mining and doing stuff. So I've come back to Microsoft after a lengthy absence, mainly just to play with the kids and stuff together. So it's pretty cool to be back. Given the amount of interest still in Minecraft, it makes you wonder whether Microsoft pulled the plug on Minecraft Earth a fraction early. The augmented reality Minecraft was shut down after the pandemic restricted people's movement worldwide, although other AR games like Pokemon Go found ways to stay relevant and accessible during the pandemic. The game was struggling before that point, to be fair, largely down to an over-reliance on microtransactions, not enough content updates, and lack of wider awareness in the gaming market. Elsewhere, everything looked gravy for Microsoft. Even revenue for Bing, the search engine everyone loves to joke about, rose by 17% year on year. And that's the end of that article. Let me close off that article about Bing. I don't use Bing. I don't use Google search. I use other private, privacy-focused search engines out there, and I encourage everyone else to do the same. DuckDuckGo, Start.com. They're out there. And Brave, who develops the Brave browser, a privacy-focused web browser, also is coming out with their own search engine as well. But more on that in a future episode, because I'd love to talk about Brave, but there's a lot to Brave. There's their browser, there's their tokens that you earn for watching ads that you want to watch. They're not put in front of you. There's a little flag, there's a little note that says, hey, you want to view this page. You click it, you earn some token, and then that's it. But more on that in another episode, which again, there's a lot of aspects to Brave. Yeah. Okay. That's all I wanted to say. So there you go. We got some hype from Sony's numbers and Microsoft. So hopefully that makes those two camps happy that they're both killing it. Okay. So we're going to shift from the gaming to some privacy articles that I found. A very important topic that I like to incorporate more in this little podcast is privacy. Hence, that's why I brought up Brave, and I use Brave. It's because it's all about privacy, because there's a lot of your data is taken, and it's not just about where you surf. It's just collecting everything from your mobile phones, computers, and all that stuff. So we need to take that control back. Because it's just being harvested, collected, put together, organized, and sold. And there's a lot of organizations out there that like to get their hands on what you're looking at. Anyways, so my first privacy article that I found actually is in regards to Signal. Now, Signal is a private, focused messaging app. I've left WhatsApp officially months ago after they came out saying that they're going to start sharing data from the app across their platforms, Facebook and Instagram. Mind you, I'm still on Facebook at the moment, but that's my next challenge right now, is to just drop Facebook and leave that behind and close that up, and that's it. But moving on with this Signal article. So now this is pretty neat. Grand jury subpoena for Signal user data, Central District of Columbia. Now this is dated April 27th of this 2021, this year. It's the first half of 2021, nearly 5 years since the first half of 2016. But in many ways, not much has changed. The United Kingdom is still trying to figure out Brexit. Another Justin Bieber song hit number one on the charts. Is it too late to say this? And Signal doesn't really know anything about you. So when we received a subpoena, now this is in speaking, the people at Signal posted this update. So when we received the subpoena from the United States Attorney's Office, in the Central District of California, it felt like 2016 all over again. Nostalgia can be great. And just like last time, we got in touch with the ACLU to work with them on our response. Now, the ACLU is the American Civil Liberties Union Foundation. Okay. I just lost my spot. So because everything in Signal is end-to-end encrypted by default, the broad set of personal information that is typically easy to retrieve in other apps simply doesn't exist on Signal servers. The subpoena requested a wide variety of information that fell into this non-existent category, including the addresses of the users, their correspondence, and the name associated with each account. Just like last time, we couldn't provide any of that. It's impossible to turn over data that we never had access to in the first place. Signal doesn't have access to your messages, your chat list, your groups, your contacts, your stickers, your profile name or avatar, or even the GIFs you search for. As a result, our response to the subpoena will look familiar. It's the same set of, I quote, account and subscriber information, end quote, that we provided in 2016. Unix timestamps for when each account was created and the date that each account last connected to the Signal service. That's it. Savvy readers of the documents below, now there's documents from the California District, United States Department of Justice, in this post, where it's a letter to the group at Signal, and then there's a letter of response. And I'll just read the letter of response. But anyways, I'll let you know. Let's continue on with this article. Just like last time, we couldn't provide any of that information. So I've covered that. So savvy readers of the documents below will notice something new. The information sufficient to show interstate wiring segment in the subpoena and response, which appears to be intended to support a jurisdictional theory that signal messages cross state lines, even when they are sent between users in the same state. These questions weren't in the subpoena from 2016, and they feel like something out of Law and Order episode in the mid-1990s, when the internet was still young and people didn't really understand how it worked. If you live in the United States and your friend in Montreal takes a picture of the downtown skyline outside of their window and sends it to you over the internet, you have you just visited Canada? Is your friend now an international photographer whose work is so powerful it transcends borders? These are questions for a good lawyer, we suppose. Speaking of good lawyers, we'd like to thank the ACLU for their assistance, particularly our counsel for this response. Signal would also like to thank a everyone who uses Signal. Our commitment to you remains unchanged. We keep working with effective and talented organizations like the ACLU to respond to future government requests, and we'll keep publishing our responses on the website. So the first transcript here is the subpoena. Okay. And here is the, I'll have to send a link to these responses, but in short, here's the letter. Through this letter and attachment, Signal Messenger LLC responds to the March 29, 2021 grand jury subpoena seeking responsive information in two categories. The American Civil Liberties Union represents Signal for the purpose of responding to the subpoena. The only information Signal maintains that is responsive to the subpoena's inquiries about particular user accounts is the time of account creation and the time of the account's last connection to Signal servers. Signal is also provided has also provided responses to subpoenas inquiries regarding the interstate nature of Signal communications based on the personal knowledge of the relevant Signal officers. Please direct any future correspondence regarding this matter to the undersigned counsel. So there you go. People are trying to get information from Signal, but the point of this article is that Signal doesn't have any data to turn over to authorities. See? So they don't have it. They can't give it up to you because they don't have it. Very simple to do. So hopefully you guys appreciated this little post that I read from the Signal website. Okay, so we got another privacy article here. Virginia lawmakers unanimously approve a bill that bans facial recognition technology. In this new world our old world is changing for a new world. We're going to be seeing a lot of technology being used against us, like more surveillance, hardcore, you know, we carry the phones. That's already the start, listening and all that. But we're talking about more AI cameras, facial recognition and all that. So in February, Virginia lawmakers from both parties unanimously approved a bill that would restrict the use of facial recognition technology. This is wonderful. I applaud these people. Right now, law enforcement agencies across the state can use this technology without the knowledge of local or state leaders. Your images could be in these systems without you even knowing it. Under the bill, any law enforcement agency using facial recognition technology must stop, and they can only get approval to use it if they seek special permission from the legislature beginning July 1st. Democratic Delegate Lashris Arid was one of the bill's lead sponsors. She said she drafted the bill after investigation found some gang detectives in Norfolk were using a controversial facial recognition app called Clearview AI to identify suspects in criminal investigations without city leaders knowing it. The AP reports that Clearview AI's app uses a database of more than 3 billion images that the company says it scraped from Facebook, Venmo, YouTube, and millions of other websites, according to a New York Times investigation. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. If your picture's on social media, it's probably in this database. Recent ACLU, we've heard that before from our previous article. Studies have found higher error rates for facial recognition software used to identify people of color, women, and the elderly. I was almost slipped out racial recognition. I quote, Arid noted, I am in support of technology that will save lives, technology that will make policing effective and efficient. But the fact of the matter is that the data is very clear that databases at this time are not allowing that work to be fair, not allowing that work to be efficient. The bill initially received little to no pushback from police, but is now being criticized by some law enforcement officials who say it's too broad and hasn't been thoroughly vetted. John Jones, executive director of the Virginia Sheriff's Association, sent CBS 6 a statement reading, HB 2031 freezes the use of facial recognition by law enforcement agencies. Earlier versions of the bill allowed for a local option, allowing public input for its use, which was acceptable because facial recognition is a valuable tool in certain applications. The technology can be safe, used without infringing on constitutional rights, while providing a tool for law enforcement agencies. I'm hopeful the governor will consider the legitimate use and allow for further consideration to accommodate all concerned parties. Again, just a pause here. We have margin of error here, and that's not right. Someone can go to jail because of a mistake. Earlier forms of the bill would have allowed police departments to seek special approval from local municipal leaders, but Republican Senator Ryan McDougal proposes amendments to make the legislation much more restrictive. Prior to this legislation, there is no real way to know whether or not law enforcement would be using facial recognition technology in our communities, which gives me some pause because this technology is controversial in nature, said Ard. And it has shown to be biased for identifying people of higher pigmentation, end quote. Arid said the bill would be discussed during the General Assembly special session in April because there needs to be an amendment that will allow airports and federal agencies within them to continue using facial recognition technology. Well, there you go. It's not 100%. And again, it is evasive. I know it can be used as a tool against crime, but there's people in this database that don't even know it, and that's not right. That's not right. Finally, folks, another privacy article that I got. This one comes all the way from, I believe it's the Netherlands, and it's in regards to Huawei. Huawei was able to eavesdrop on Dutch mobile network KPN report. So Chinese technology company Huawei would have had free access to KPN's mobile network in the past and could eavesdrop on all conversations. De Volksrant, if I'm saying this correctly, writes this based on a secret report from 2010, which their editorial staff reviewed. According to the newspaper, now this is the NL Times, Huawei was able to eavesdrop on mobile numbers from the telecom provider at that time. This also included the phones of the then prime ministers, Jan-Peter Balkenende, if I'm saying that correctly, various ministers and Chinese dissidents. Huawei also knew which numbers were tapped by police and intelligence services. Huawei says it never acted inappropriately by abusing its position in the Netherlands. KPN says in a response that it has no indications that lines were tapped or that customer data was stolen. Now, how in the digital age, how do you know that a line is tapped? Back in the analog days, you have to physically, connect to the copper wire. And then somehow you kind of know because the more people were on the same line, the lower the volume got, the weak, you know what I mean? But maybe this is just my ignorance here. But anyways, KPN used Huawei's technology in 2009. Six Chinese employees of the company worked at the then head office in The Hague. In that year, the telecom provider asked Capgemini researchers to analyze any risks associated with Huawei and how the Chinese company behaved within KPN. The domestic security service Avid, AIVD, had already warned KPN several times about the risk of espionage by Huawei. The conclusions turned out to be so alarming that the internal report was kept secret. The continued existence of KPN Mobile is in serious danger because permits may be revoked or the government and businesses may give up their confidence in KPN if it becomes known that the Chinese government can eavesdrop on KPN mobile numbers and shut down the network. De Volksrant quotes the report. At the time, KPN's mobile network had 6.5 million subscribers. Now, unauthorized access from China. The Capgemini report stated that Huawei staff, both within KPN buildings and from China, could eavesdrop on unauthorized, uncontrolled, and unlimited KPN mobile numbers. The company gained unauthorized access to the heart of the mobile network in China. How often that happened is not clear because it was not recorded anywhere. KPN informed the news source, ANP, on Saturday, which this news it was published April 17th, 2021. Where was I here? On Saturday that, quote, it has never been established in all years that customer data was stolen by Huawei from our networks or our customer systems or that it has been tapped, end quote. If it had, the company said it would have, and I quote, certainly informed the appropriate authorities and our customers, end quote. Huawei employees have not had unauthorized access to KPN's network and data, nor they have the extracted data from that network. Huawei has at all times worked under the explicit authorization of KPN, the Chinese technology firm said. This applied to both employees of Huawei and the Huawei employees hired by KPN to support its activities. Outsourcing. Since our start in the Netherlands 15 years ago, we have been held accountable by the government authorities for any unauthorized acts, Huawei states in a release published Saturday. Now, this is going back a couple weeks. Based on the Capgemini report, KPN decided to refrain from outsourcing the full maintenance of the mobile core network. To this day, the telecom company maintains its mobile core network itself with the help of Western suppliers. To tackle the risks of the systems of the network, KPN said it was implementing an improvement plan. De Volksrant reported last month that the Chinese company also had unlimited access to the customers' data of KPN subsidiary Telfort, and Huawei at the time also denied that its staff acted unethically at any point in time. Now, this also is an issue that affected us here in Canada with our mobile networks buying Huawei hardware for the mobile networks on the towers, I guess 5G. And I think the government at the time, I still don't know what their stance is. But I believe our Rogers uses Ericsson for their antennas, their hardware on the towers and all that. So I'm not sure about Bell and Telus to see who they went with for their 5G networks for if it was Huawei. I'm not sure, but I know this was a topic talking point about letting using Chinese hardware from China just for fear that they have access, backdoor access to the hardware. So it looks like the Netherlands there with their KPN network have issues that there is a possibility that, you know, open access to the network is a possibility. But there you have it, folks. Privacy. There is no such thing as privacy. Everybody wants to spy. Everyone wants to know what you do, where you go, what problems you have, all that. But anyways, folks, that's our final article for this massive, massive edition of the Tech Left podcast. And this concludes this week's episode of the Tech Loft podcast. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in and listening. Once again, I want to remind you all that if wherever you are listening to this podcast, please subscribe. You can also use the Anchor app since this podcast is powered by Anchor. It is a Spotify product where you can make your own podcasts for free. And there's a lot of, I don't see any limitations on here. So there's a lot of space. You can record using the Anchor app. Now, if you do use the Anchor app to listen to podcasts, there's also a feature called Messages. So you can drop messages to the show. And if you don't use the Anchor app and you want to drop in a message, please reach out to us over Twitter at The Tech Loft. You can send some DMs in there. And that's it. Thank you for listening. And until next time, see you then.